by His grace, all the things that were written by the Goswamis, spoken by Mahaprabhu, they were revived. They were revived by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and presented in a way that was relevant to the modern society. At his time, of course. But he was able to present it in a way that could be distributed even to the Western world and also could revive the teachings of Mahaprabhu even in Bengal and the rest of India. And he was teaching in such a universally accessible way, not in a sectarian manner, but in a universally accessible to everyone and helpful to everyone, whatever their particular religious outlook or political, etc. outlook. And it preached the brotherhood of man. He was very fond of Jesus Christ for that also. He felt Jesus Christ had that message to love God, but also to love your neighbor. And he liked that point very much. These two points that you find in the Christian community, to love God and to love your neighbor. He made this the foundation of all of his efforts to preach. And he found it most perfectly expressed in the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. These principles he found expressed most perfectly. So of all his writings, there is one that came that is considered the last writing that he made. The last of his writings, last instruction of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is called Swam Niyamadarshakam. And Swaniyamadashakam is the 12 verses of my own self-imposed regulative principles. In English in translation. 12 verses of my own self-imposed regulative principles. How he conducted his life, how he conducted his mind, given here in this writing. The principles that he held deep within his heart, not imposed externally, from outside, but realize principles that would help realize these ideas of love of God and love of others, which he felt were the purpose of religion. He is famous for having said that religion means proper adjustment. Proper adjustment. How to adjust ourselves in that way, which we can get the proper satisfaction from our life. We're all living in different ways, not without much instruction about how to live. Everyone thinks we can breathe, we can eat, we can see, we can do all these things. And so whatever enhances those activities we like, and what inhibits those activities we don't like, and then people can live like animals if they want, just observing that kind of existence. And generally people, if they don't have any direction, they will go in the wrong direction. This happens to be the fate of the human being, because he has a free will, but he also has to know how to use that free will. Some idea has a higher intelligence, but he also has to know what direction to take to follow in that, with that higher intelligence. And that doesn't necessarily have to come from an external source. But if we don't have the internal sense developed how to understand these things, then some help is needed also from outside ourselves. And especially in the human life, and we are set up to, so that following some examples given to us from parents, or from the society is necessary for us. It's like automatically we don't know how to use a computer, for instance, unless somebody shows us. That's not an inborn knowledge that we have. And if we learn how to use it nicely, we can do many things with it that even beyond what we were taught. Man has that ability also to be creative. But some basic things are needed first. That's all like that. A regulative principle, self-imposed regulative principles. I'll let me read his first verses about the objects of devotion, birth after birth. Koro Shri Gorange Tad Udita Subhakti Parakarane Sachi Sunor Lila Vikashitas Utirhe Nijamanho Arer Namni Priste Aditish Titishtu Titishu Rupanu Gajane Sukha Prokte Shastre Prati Jane Manastam Kalo Rati. No matter, wherever, and whenever and wherever I happen to take birth, let my loving affection and attachment remain unshaken throughout each and every lifetime for the following things. For my divine spiritual master, for Sri Gauranga, for the detailed topics of pure devotional service, and the methods and its execution, as personally instructed by him, for the holy places of pilgrimage, such as Sri Navadvip, Sri Chaitra, Sri Vrindavan, and so on, which are all blooming with divine sanctity due to his performance of wonderful pastimes there, for the Diksha Mantra bestowed upon me by the divine grace of my spiritual master, for the holy name of Sri Hari, for the most beloved eternal associates of the Lord, and for the sacred days of celebration throughout the year, such as Sri Ekadasi, Sri Janmashtami, Sri Radhastami, and the appearance and disappearance days of the great Vaishnavacharyas, for the Lord's dearmost devotees who strictly follow in the sacred footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami, and for the holy scriptures narrated by Srila Shukadeva Goswami, such as the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the second verse, the internal identity of Lord Chaitanya, the eternal God. Sada Vindaranye Madhura Rasa Danye Rasa Maya Param Saktim Radham Parama Rasa Murtim Ramayati Sachayvayam Krishna Nija Pajanam Mudramupadisam Sachis Nur Gude Gode Prati Jani Mamastam Prabhu Varaha. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna is the personified abode of all divinely ecstatic mellow tastes, and Sri Radhika is the topmost abode of all his divinely potent energies. Indeed, she is the personified form of the highest mellow of love and separation. Within the forest of Brinda, which is gloriously rich and the all-pervading treasure of the sweetest Madhura Rasa, this Lord Sri Krishna is continuously enjoying as he makes Sri Radhika happy by his loving service rendered to her 24 hours a day. This very same Lord Krishna is exactly identical to the son of Mother Sachi, who eternally lives simultaneously yet separately in Gaudadesh as the instructor of the process for rendering his own service. May the Sachi Nandana become my spiritual master and guide, and may he always appear to me just to lead me on the proper devotional path, birth after birth. It's very nice. He mentions here, Lord Krishna is continuously enjoying as he makes Sri Radhika happy by his loving service to her 24 hours a day. We generally think of Radharani as serving Krishna, but here he is mentioning about Krishna serving Radharani, and in that way he is enjoying. And the third verse, rejection of things unfavorable for Sri Radha Krishna's eternal service. Vairagyam grayama bhavatina hiyad bhakti janitam tatajkinam banam achati yadi visesam namur manyute sprihame nastange hari bhajana sokyam nahiratas tato radha krishna prachura paricharya bhavatume. Let no form of so-called renunciation or aestheticism become fit for my acceptance if it does not give rise to the continual expansion of my eternal serving mood of loving devotion. And let no form of so-called knowledge or intellectual cultivation appeal to me if it does not admit the reality of eternal individuality shared by the Lord and his devotees during their everlasting daily pastimes. I have no desire at all for practicing any branch of the Eightfold Yoga process, for none of them contain any scope for enjoying the daily pleasure of serving Lord Hari, such as his confidential worship does. Rather, may I render profuse, uninterrupted, confidential service 24 hours a day to Sri Sri Radha Krishna for all of time to come, such service being the means as well as the end. Fourth verse. Where to live and where not to live. Makutire pi kshudre praja bhajana yoge tarutale sachi sunos tirte bhavatu nitaram nivashati nachanyatra kshetre hubuddha gana seve asevye pulakito vasammi prasade vipula dana rajanvita iha. May I continuously reside in a small, lonely cottage at the base of a desire tree in the most holy abode of Sri Navadvipa Dham, which is sanctified by the lotus feet of Sri Sachinandana. Such a bhajan kutir is perfectly suitable for constant remembrance of and service to the divine daily sports that are always present in Sri Vrajadham. Indeed, in contrast to this, I will never live in any other place, even if it is bankered for with great enthusiasm by the most wise sages and demigods of all sorts. As far as all other places in this world are concerned, whether opulent places, palaces, or temples, whether possessing vast riches of enormous wealth, or princely kingdoms and property, all such places cannot attract me as much as my modest bhajan kutir and Sri Navadvipa Dham does. Fifth verse. The real principle of Dharma, which is devoid of designations. Varne shaktirmena kalu mamata yasrama vidho nadamne mama ratir ihaste kochirapi param tatad dharme marma jara sariram dhitamidam ato dharmam sarvam subhajanam sahayan abhilase. I have no attachment at all to any of those caste divisions of society, such as Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. And I certainly do not identify with any order of life, such as Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. I have no fondness or respect at all for the so-called piety of religiosity, or even the so-called impiety of sinful life in this world, nor not even the slightest regard. Instead, I truly desire whatever is practically required just to maintain this material body in order to facilitate my performance of pure devotional service. This is the actual righteousness that I will hope for as long as this material body continues to exist. And the sixth verse. Favorable, authorized practices and devotional qualities. Sudanyam saragam sakala sahanam manandatanam dayam sukritya srihari charana seva mama tapaha sadacharo so me prabhu pada paraya samudita prabhos chaitanyas yakshaya charita piyusakir kritisu. My austere vow is constant devotion to the lotus feet of Srihari. In order to execute that vow, I have accepted the following qualities of my own endeavor. I practice great humility in my dealings with everyone. I try to keep simplicity and purity prominent and all my practical arrangements. I maintain extreme tolerance in all types of favorable or unfavorable circumstances. I offer all respect unto others, regardless of who they are. I feel genuine compassion for all living entities and act accordingly. There are many transcendental activities which are recommended by the great devotees who are fixed up in unalloyed devotional service to the lotus feet of Sriman Mahaprabhu. And these can be found described in the books that are full of the imperishable character and pastimes of Mahaprabhu Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Only such transcendentally nectarian activities, being recommended by great devotees and practiced by Lord Chaitanya himself, are indeed my own. And the seventh verse. Repulsion from those things which are disconnected from Sri Radhika. Navaikunte rajyena javishaya karye mam ratir na nirvane moksha mama matir ihastik shanam api. For janandad anyad hari vilasitam pavanam api katanchin mama radhavayan. Radhanvayan viraditam no sukhyati asukhayati. I have no attraction for living in Vaikuntha, that part of the spiritual sky presided over by Sri Lakshmi Narayan, nor I desire useless activities of gross sense gratification in this material world. I will never cherish the desire for attaining the divine bliss of impersonal liberation, even for a second. Furthermore, there are many transcendental pastimes of Sri Hari that may be very purifying for all conditioned souls. Yet such pastimes will never give me any real happiness at all. This is because such pastimes are quite different from blissful ecstasies of Raja consciousness, being completely devoid of any relationship with Sri Radhika, who is the one and only fountainhead of pure joy. Radha Dasya is the ultimate. And saying here, Radha Dasya is the ultimate connection that he is desiring, the fountainhead of pure joy. Very different from Krishna conception. Krishna is called the fountainhead, huh? Akila Rasamrita Murtir generally refers to Krishna. But here Bhakti Vinod gives that position to Sri Radhika. In relationship with her is the source and the fountain of all joy. The eighth verse. Renunciation of all kinds of bad association. Name patni kanya tanaya janani bandhu nichaya aro bhakte bhakto nakalo nakalu yadi tisham sramamata abhaktanam ana grahanam api dosha vishayinam katam tesham sangad hari bhajana sudir bhavati me. I now disown my wife, my daughters, my sons, my mother, and all my friends, if they have no genuine attachment for Lord Hari, but for his devotees or for his devotional service. It is definitely a great sin even to accept food grains prepared by such non-devotional, materialistic sense gratifiers. If I were to remain in the company of such persons, then how will the eternal perfection of my Hari Bhajan ever come about? And the ninth verse. Avoidance of so-called devotees who proudly neglect Sri Radhika. Asat tat kayar andhan jara sukam param krishna vimukan nirvanas shaktam satatam ati dure pariharan aradham govindam bhajati nitaram dam vikataya tad abhyase kintu kshanam apinan apina yami vratam idam. There are certain persons who appear to be very advanced in devotion. Indeed, to increase their service to the Lord, they have long since rejected the evil company of those who are completely blinded by faulty arguments arising from so-called intellectual logic. Those who are madly addicted to the fleeting pleasures of the dull material body and those who are averse to and envious of Lord Sri Krishna, and those who are very fond of the inferior, distasteful concept of liberation as it is cherished by the impersonalists. They have thus favorably avoided all kinds of bad association. Yet it is seen that such persons worship Lord Govinda without Srimati Radharani being present. This just shows that they are actually puffed up with excessive pride and conceited arrogance directed against Sri Radhika, who is herself the best worshipper of Govinda. Therefore, I will never go anywhere near such so-called devotees, even for a second. This is my strict vow. And 10th verse. How to live simply and perform bhajana until death. Vrajabhajan. Prasadana kshirasana vasan apatradibir aham padarhaya nirvaiha vyavahritim asango asangha kukvishaye vasam isha kshetre yugala bhajananandita manasa tanu mokshe kale yugapada paranam pada tale. Let me see. Vasam isha kshetre yugala bhajananandita manas tanu mokshe kale yugapada paranam pada tale. Passing my life in a simple, practical way. Eating only prasad, food grains, and milk products, and the remnants of the Supreme Lord, His mercy, wearing only prasad cloth that was offered to the deity, using only the pots and utensils sanctified by the Lord's exclusive service, I will thus remain completely aloof from material sense gratification. Living by the side of Radha Kund, her very own abode, worshipping the divine couple, with a blissful mind, the time will come for my body to die at the soles of the devotees' lotus feet, who are themselves serving the lotus feet of the divine couple. I will thus give up my body. And the 11th verse. How to worship the lotus feet of Sri Radhika's pure devotees. Sachi sunur agya grahana chaturoya vrajavane pararadhyam raram bhajati nitaram krishna rasikam aham tvetat padamritam anudinam nashtikamana vaheyam vai pitva shirasi chamura sanati yutaha. There is a class of pure devotee who is completely expert and experienced in following all the instructions of Sri Sachinandana. Such a devotee necessarily worships Srimati Radhika, Srimati Radharani exclusively, who is indeed the most worshipable personality, and who is deeply absorbed every day and relishing the divine mellows of Sri Krishna's association. The pure devotee of this caliber definitely performs his confidential worship wholeheartedly and with exclusive surrender unto Sri Radhika. Thus he always lives in Sri Vraja Mandal. I shall take the nectarian water that has washed the lotus feet of such a devotee and carry it on my head. Drinking it with great joy and with a devout heart, I will then happily offer my full prostration upon the ground in the nicest, most perfect way that I possibly can. This will indeed be my routine each and every day. And the 12th verse. Firm determination to transcend Maya by daily following this stava. Arer dasyam damo mama tu chira kalam prakrito mahamaya yogad abhirni pati ta dukha jaladu ito yasyam urvam sva niyamam niyama suratya pratidinam sahayo me matram vitata dalani vaishnava kripa. As a spirit soul, my natural tendency is to be eternally situated in the loving devotional service of Lord Hari. However, due to strong power and influence of the Lord's Mahamaya, I have somehow plunged deeply into the fathomless ocean of material sorrow and grief. I shall transcend this world of Maya and go to the spiritual world only by faithfully following these self-imposed vows every day. And the only way I will get the strength to follow these vows is by attaining the mercy of all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. May their causeless mercy and soft-hearted compassion, which wards off all illusion, become my exclusive friend and guide for all of time everlasting. And then there's an extra verse here, 13. It's called Falshuti. The benediction of eternal service gained by reading this stava. Kritam kenapyetat swabhajana vido swam niyamakam partedyo vishada pina yugala rupe nirpita manaha raje rada krishno bhajati kila samprapyanilayam sva manjaraya Anjariya Paschad Vivida Vivisham Sakurute. The stava name Sri Niyam Dwarasakam was written by someone to adjust and regulate his own personal mode of performing bhajan. If any other devotee happens to chant this stava with a very special quality of resolute faith, fully offering his mind unto the supreme beautiful forms of the divine couple, Sri Radha Govinda, his most dear possession, or to the divine beauty of their deity form, or to the beauty of Sri Gaurasundar, the combined form of Sri Radha Govinda, or to Sri Rupa Goswami, the dear most beloved devotee of Sri Radha Govinda and Sri Gaurasundar, then that fortunate reader definitely attains his own place of eternal residence in Sri Rajadham. Always following behind his own Manjari Guru and his own spiritual body of a Manjari, he finally renders all kinds of variegated eternal services for the exclusive worship of Sri Radha Krishna. And thus ends Swaniyama Dwarasakam. Sri Bhaktivinoda Thakur's last writing. Hare Krishna. Are you able to follow?
Maharaj, actually, it seems to be, you know, very high, you know, plain.
Very high, very simple, very high.
Reading also the report prepared by Kusum Didi Maharaj that you talk in Princeton. It was so nice that, you know, the qualities that devotee develops of, you know, satisfying the best servitor.
I don't want to compete. I don't want to compete with Guru, and we don't want to compete with Vaishnava for getting Krishna's favor or for being noticed or for getting any honor. Not our idea. In the material world, everyone is competing to get the highest regard for himself, from others. What we want, only to serve those who are serving Krishna very nicely and to increase their service. And they are capable of serving Krishna. Then why we should, if our objective is to serve Krishna, why we should try to compete? Instead, I want to get the attention of Krishna or the attention of others for my service. So that is not Krishna, that is not Radha Dasya. Radha Dasya means to serve the best servitor of the Lord, who is serving the Lord the best, even better than myself. Then why should I not help them to render that, to render their service, do what I can in some insignificant way? If I could have that position, and then how much that we are pleasing Krishna will be the maximum effort we can make to please Krishna if our objective is that. If our objective is to please Krishna, then we will think like in that way automatically. If I have some other motive, then we will think in a more competitive way. So devotion,
also,
dedication to Krishna is
so
more
nice
higher,
that, you know,
higher than devotion or dedication to Krishna. Has to be the highest aspiration to serve, to satisfy the Lord. It has to be our highest aspiration. Then everything will come. Everything will come in the proper way. As soon as we forget that our objective is to satisfy the Lord, then other things will come in to contaminate our mentality. Other things will come. So only the mood of pure sacrifice, pure service, self-sacrifice and service will free us from all other contaminations. All other contaminations. Only the attitude of pure service. And then automatically we will catch the proper mood of Radha Dasya. Service of Srimati Radharani. What's that, Maharaj?
Maharaj, I was also, you know, thinking about that, you know, that devotees of Vrindavan, they can sacrifice millions of their life for just, you know, giving, you know, some little satisfaction even to Lord, you know, Sri Krishna. So that, you know, self sacrifice, and that is the also, you know, one of the important, you know, character I see in that report actually.
Devotee who has no desire except service of satisfaction of Krishna, then they will look for even the most insignificant service. May not be doing any great thing and accomplishing any great feat in this world. May not be noticed by anyone. But if they feel within their heart that they have some slight connection with the service of Krishna. And their service may not even be producing any result, but if they feel that at least they have been given by the grace of Sri Radhika, by the grace of Sri Guru, some slight touch of service, slight touch of service of the most insignificant type, they are very eager to take that up. Very eager. And they don't consider that this will bring some grandeur to me. Only that they have been given the great fortune of being able to serve. Such a valuable thing, because just that one order from Guru that do this, they can mold their whole life around that. And whatever the circumstances they find themselves in. If they have that order of Gurudev, then they are happy, they are satisfied that they can do that. Their whole life they can mold around that service. And meaningful life, and satisfying life, life of fulfillment, of spiritual fulfillment. And they have that, got that, and they don't need any other type of enjoyment. So powerful, one drop of service.
Maharaj,
yes.
Maharaj, actually I once heard from one of the tapes of Srila Govind Maharaj while he was describing the pastimes of Srila Sridhar Maharaj, actually, that I think one composition is there where he says, seeing the distress of the people of this world, then these two personalities, Sarup Damodar Goswami, actually taken the form of two mendicants and appeared in this world and chanted the name of the God. So by this statement, actually Gadadhar Pandit's appearance is in the form of Bhaktivinod Thakur, and Sarup Damodar is like our Guru Kshada Babaji Maharaj. So why this type of, you know, mood was inferred in these two personalities?
I couldn't hear exactly everything you were saying. Some interruption, breaking up. Can you say in a short sentence what you want to convey?
Maharaj, actually, sometimes when the acharyas have been described, so their connection has been described in a particular way with the eternal associates. So in Gadadhar, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's case, his mood is said to be that of Gadadhar Pandit. So why is that, Maharaj?
Gadadhar Pandit.
And also Swarup Damodar Goswami's mood was seen in Gaur Kishwardas Babaji Maharaj. Why that was so?
Who was seen in Gaur Kishore?
Swarup Damodar Goswami.
Swarup Damodar.
Yeah.
Swarup Damodar of Mahaprabhu's time.
Yes, Maharaj.
He was seen as Gaur Kishore?
That mood, Maharaj, that conception was seen in Gaur Kishwardas Das Babaji Maharaj. And
oh,
Gadadhar
Gaur Kishore seemed like Swarup Damodar, is that it?
And Bhaktivinoda Thakur
was like Gadadhar.
Gadadhar.
And Gaur Kishore was known as, I'm thinking of Jagannath Das Babaji. I'm not sure, I never heard that before about Gaur Kishore being like Swarup Damodar. I never heard that. Where have you heard that?
Maharaj, there is a composition that Gadadhar Mitravar Sri Swarup Damodar Sadakal Gaur Krishna Jaje, then Sri Gaur Ichhaye Dui Mohimati Kabo Mui Aprakrita Parishat Katha Prakoto Hoya Sheve Krishna Gaura Bhinna Deve Aprakato. In this explanation, Srila Govinda Maharaj drawn this conclusion. So from that I was telling, asking you, Maharaj.
I have not heard that. What did he say?
Well, Maharaj, I also don't understand that. That's why I asked.
Well, what does he say there?
That Gadadhar's best friend is Swarup Damodar Goswami. And they always worship Gaur Krishna. And seeing the distress of the material world, the Jagat, they took the form of mendicants and always chanting Krishna's name. So how we can describe the glory of these two personalities? They are transcendental associates of the Lord. They appeared in this world always serving Krishna, who is non-different from Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Actually, and then this topic cannot be told to each and every, means freely. So in this verse, when Srila Govindana was describing in one of the tapes, then I heard that this comparison was drawn.
The what?
This comparison was drawn.
And he didn't explain any further. He didn't explain that any further?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Oh, yes, he did not.
No, Maharaj.
He didn't explain. Then I don't know what he was trying to say there. Only as far as Gadadhar Pandit is concerned and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, Gadadhar Pandit was serving in the mood of separation, tense mood of separation, so much so that his heart had been stolen by the Lord, Sri Maha, Sri Sachinandana. The heart was not in his, he had no heart in him anymore. It had been taken from his chest. Heart had been given so much over to Mahaprabhu that is felt empty in himself. So much affection he had. A very important conception. And Bhaktivinoda had that kind of love. And of course, Gadadhar Pandit Mahaprabhu, they were feeling that kind of love and separation. And it was representing Radha. Gadadhar represented Radha. Radharani. Love and separation for Krishna. And Krishna himself, Mahaprabhu, loss of Radharani's own heart in Mahaprabhu. Of course, Mahaprabhu then had, because he had not only Krishna, but he was also having Radharani in himself. Radharani had been submerged in Mahaprabhu, Radharani and Krishna. And so Radharani, as Gadadhar, did not have herself in her body. She was in Krishna, absorbed. Her heart, her whole mood, her mind, everything was absorbed in Mahaprabhu. And thus, it was Radha and Krishna combined like that. And Bhaktivinoda was having that kind of intense dedication and service, surrender. Whole feeling, whole mood was like that, absorbed in Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His teachings, his mood, everything. Everything that he represented. Bhaktivinoda had adopted that in his own whole life and soul. And he was only presenting that.
Maharaj, he used to worship Gaur Gadadhar, Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Yes. For that reason, he understood that kind of emotion that Gadadhar had for Mahaprabhu. Same as Radharani's love. It was relishing that kind of mood of love and separation for Mahaprabhu.
Yeah, you started the lecture by saying that Bhaktivinoda Thakur seen the good quality of Jesus Christ.
Of Jesus Christ, yes. Yes, he liked that mood. Huh?
So Bhaktivinoda Thakur seen the good quality of Jesus, and also he was preaching to all over the world, sending his books and mixing with so many British of that time, and in a very scientific or let's say advanced philosophical and other ways he was preaching. So it seems that the good quality of, or the symptom of those devotees who have that mood, is that they see good quality in everyone and they utilize all the means of preaching, including scientific preaching.
Yes. Very good. Idea, he doesn't offend anyone. If who is Krishna conscious, how can he offend anyone? It's inconceivable. One who is Krishna conscious must see everywhere the Supreme Lord is there. Meaning of Krishna consciousness. How he can offend others is quite foreign to a devotee. He says here, in his sixth verse, he says, I offer all respect unto others, regardless of who they are. Very nice. Like Mahan, like Nityananda Prabhu. What's that?
Maharaj, I am asking that if somebody gets converted by getting some job and some money to other religion, suppose say. So today I was coming in the train and one Bengali, he got converted into Christian. We were not knowing. And some discussion came, Maharaj, in South India, this is happening and like that. Then he was asking a question, is it wrong that if somebody gets job and money and he gets converted into some other religion, is it wrong? Then what I told him, that religion is not based on any material gains. Religion is based on some gain on the platform of spiritual existence, not on material existence. So the religion must be based on that, and it should not degrade to any material impulse. So I explained something in that direction. So what do you say, Maharaj, about this?
I would say yes. We don't care what you are doing with your religion. Krishna said, Sarva Dharmam Paritya, give up all Dharma. Don't worry, we're not concerned with religion. We're not concerned with religiosity. You may do what you like as far as that's concerned. What we are concerned with is how much you are developing your love for God. How much you are understanding the purpose of your life is to establish your relationship, your eternal relationship with the Lord. Incomplete self-sacrifice, giving yourself completely over to surrender to the Lord. And whatever external religiosity you are engaged in, that's your business. But your life should be dedicated to this. And whatever religion you follow or whatever principles you follow, it should be for the cultivation of this thing. How much you are developing your love for God. I think you said that basically. Huh?
Maharaj, you know, we had some discussion on that in a comparative religious study. You know, we must religion according
not like that. No, that's another thing. Another thing. And whatever religion, Bhaktivinoda was of that opinion, whatever religion you are following, the idea would be to develop your love for God. If you're a Christian or Muslim or whatever, means you're able to develop your love for Krishna. By that means you're able to serve. You are feeling connected with the service of God. And then different conceptions of God may be found in different religions. So we can find their differences. How what conception of God do you have? And what does your religion teach about that? That's another thing. But the main thing, the first thing is to establish, make sure that you are actually connecting with Krishna, with God, by some means of service, faith, and service and love. Then you are in the proper position to understand everything. And how much you have established your relationship with Krishna, that will depend on who, what type of instruction you're getting from whom. Oh, if you associate with the Vaishnava, then you will understand the deepest connection, highest conception of God, as your lover, the beloved Madhurya, who can awaken our highest love, highest affection, love and separation. Then that loving connection that we have established, that can be cultivated to the highest degree possible. Living entity, the love Sri Radha has for Krishna, and we can follow in that line. And there we will find satisfaction of that plane. But from the beginning stage, we have to first have that connection, that by whatever I am doing, am I actually understanding that my relationship is not to this world, but is to developing my love for Krishna, love for God. And that will be the determining factor of what you are doing is right or not. You may take Christianity for your income. That's another thing. But point is, are you actually understanding what is the purpose of life? We want to emphasize that. You try to convert him back to Hinduism or this or the other thing, that won't be so important. Let him understand first what is it that his purpose in life is. I would take that approach.
That's true.
Huh? Yeah.
Yes, Maharaj, that's true.
I would take that approach. Maharaj. Yes?
Maharaj. I think, Maharaj, in that verse, it was mentioned that Gadadhar Pandit's best friend was Swarup Damodar. And it seems in Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, his best friend was Swarup Damodar, this Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He sent his son also for initiation to him.
Mm, I see.
So there is deep
connection there.
Yeah. It says, Gadadhar Priyo Mitravar. Gadadhar Pandit's best friend, dearmost friend, is Swarup Damodar Goswami.
Well, if we think from the Krishna's Leela, then Swarup Damodar is Lalita, and Gadadhara Radharani, then they are very closely connected. Best friend is there, Gadadhara, and Swarup Damodar, it means Radharani and Lalita, same connection, right?
Yes, Maharaj.
So the Lalita and Radharani are Lalita is the best friend of Srimati Radharani. And you can say Radharani is also the best friend of Lalita. Something like that. And then Bhaktivinoda and Gaur Kishore. Bhaktivinoda was very appreciative of Gaur Kishore, that his son he wanted to have initiated from him. In that connection, you can say they are good friends. And they were in their life. They were good friends. He respected one another very highly. And that connection may be there. Lalita, or Lalita means Swarup Damodar. And then if Bhaktivinoda is seen as Gadadhar, then it is Radharani. And Bhakti Siddhanta, Prabhupada saw that. And his Gurudev was like Radharani. Sometimes he
Yes.
said, mentioned he could see like that. And Radharani means
He
without
always
heart. In
Radharani.
Chaitanya Leela. Huh? What's that?
He always Bhakti Bino Radharani. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur.
He saw him like that. But Radharani in the form of Gadadhar, because the love and separation was there. And that great, great love of immense, such immense nature that a whole heart was given over to Mahaprabhu. Life, mind, everything. All right.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Bhakti, you know, it brings out so much in us.
Maharaj, can I ask some others?
What's that? Okay.
Maharaj, you wrote one paper about two infinity, and I understood that when I read that paper something, but that two infinity is not yet God. So what is the infinity of God different from the two infinity of being and its determination?
What is the relation between true infinity and God, you are asking?
No. True infinity is not yet God, Maharaj.
Uh-huh.
That I understood from your article.
Yes.
True infinity is just unity in difference.
That's what?
Unity in difference. Identity in difference. That is true infinity.
Uh-huh.
So, but what about the absoluteness of God? How it is related to infinity? Because
well, true infinity is not only unity in difference. True infinity indicates being for self. Being for self. True infinity means that it has transcended its imminent.
Yeah, being
itself. Transcended its imminent being. And you see, the finite things, they also have infinity, are united with infinity. The finite has a limit. Every finite thing has a limit. But what is that limit? What is outside the finite? That's the infinite.
Determination.
No, the outside the infinite, the outside the finite is the infinite. Finite and infinite are opposite, right? So
yeah.
Finite, what is finite, is
yeah.
Not infinite. Now that not is the limitation,
yeah.
The negation.
Yeah.
So the
yeah.
Finite is negated at its limit. It's not finite, it becomes the non-finite. But the non-finite is what? The infinite. Infinite means the non-finite, right? And the word infinite
yeah.
means not finite. The very word.
Negation.
Very word means not finite. Infinite, very word means not finite. And the finite has a limit. And at that limit, it is not
yes.
finite anymore. It's the negation of finitude or the not finite. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm hearing Maharaj.
Okay. Then the non-finite is united with the finite at the limit. The limit of the
yeah.
finite is the non-finite or the infinite. So finite is
yeah.
also infinite is also there even in the non in the finite. But there's still not that is simply the opposition
yes.
of finite and infinite. That's
yes.
simply the unity of the two, and it's also the difference of the two. That unity and difference is found there. However,
yeah.
the true infinite is
yeah.
even more than that. And we have to go higher than that. Because what happens
yeah.
in the true infinite is that the finite is also submerged. And also another movement is there.
Yeah.
To keep the finite and non-finite simply united like that.
Beyond the
if you keep the finite and infinite, yes, united in that simple way, then the infinite, so-called
yeah.
infinite or non-finite, is also finite. Because we're talking about the limit.
Yeah.
The same limit that negates the finite also negates the infinite.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
They have a common
yeah.
limit, that means.
Yeah.
So non-infinite can't
yes.
be limited and be infinite. Huh? Can't be limited like that and still be infinite. So a higher conception is needed.
Yeah.
And in that higher conception, the finite must emerge, submerge into the infinite and be distinguished in a different way as a determinant. A determination of the finite, that is for the finite. A determination, the finite, infinite, and determine itself as finite. And that determination of itself as finite is
yeah.
only possible if the infinite, the true infinite, is transcends
yeah.
finite, the finite, infinite opposition. It has to transcend and include it within
yeah.
itself. is including within itself, is its being for itself. And so the true infinite rises above both the finite and the infinite and their opposition. Both the unity and difference are contained within the higher concept of the true infinite. And here we have the beginning. Being for self means the beginning of subjectivity, which explains the true nature of God. The true nature of God is that it's not either finite or infinite. A higher, a truer conception of infinite in which he is self-determined. Determines as he is. The determination which represents the finite is within himself, within himself, within itself. That's his own determination.
Okay.
A little complicated, but anyhow. Those ideas are found in the true infinite when Hegel explains it in a little very intricate.
Is there any connection with this Vedantic idea of, you know, Brahman, Bhagavan, and the Jiva?
What connection? What are you saying? Well, Hegel has some connection with that? Yes, we can say that.
No, no, Maharaj, this explanation of finite and infinite and true infinite means the way of, you know, conceiving infinite.
Yes.
Actually, Maharaj, one asked me, why do you say God is only He? Then that is the finite, finitization of God. That means He's not a She. Then I'm just thinking, you know, how to answer him that question.
He contains She. And not that you say He, then that we don't mean She also. Otherwise, how you can say He? Unless you know the difference between he and she. Well, you only can say he because you understand there's a distinction there. Right? If I say, I gave you an example, if I say blind, then we have to know seeing is also present. Seeing is also implied. So if I say he, then I'm making a distinction already. I'm saying the distinction between he and she is also there. Right? Automatically. Otherwise, we can't say he. If we have no distinction between he and she, we don't say he. What do we would call it? It's speaking a different language. Right? So he also already implies she. God is all encompassing.
Yes, ma'am.
So his he and his she are also there. They can't be separated from one another. Right?
Yes, ma'am. Very nice. Explanation.
Anything else?
So, Maharaj, what do you think about this, Maharaj? You know, this Jiva and Bhagavan. Is there any explanation that Hegel is giving this infinite, the way, you know, the Mayavadis thinks, how it is, you know, the different detail? Means the Jiva's negation you are talking about.
Well, if you say Brahman, think Brahman means oneness. Let's say the infinite. If Brahman is one or infinite. And then the infinite and the word infinite, we have in and finite. In and finite. And in this case means non. So the infinite means the non-finite. Right? And that non-finite, finite refers to the differences. Difference. What is different? Because finite things, one is different from the other. That's what makes them finite. When everything is the same, then there, we can't have no any difference. Then everything is one continuity. It's continuous. It's only when things are different that we have discontinuity or differences. Understand? There's oneness and difference. If everything is one, then it's continuous. If it's different, then we have finite things. You see? So the continuous is sometimes thought as the infinite, and the discontinuous as the finite. Okay. So now when we have, if we just only consider the infinite, here we have the non-finite. In Sanskrit we call it Advaita. Advaita means the non-dual. So the, if the infinite is seen as the Advaita, as the non-dual, then it's actually the negation of the duality or negation of the finite. The infinite is the negation of the finite. And the Advaita is the negation of the dual, or the differences. Dual means that there are differences. And the finite also means differences. So if the infinite is the non-dual, then it means the negation of the finite. And then, if the infinite is the negation of the finite, then there must be a finite in order to get to the infinite. right? In order for
Correct.
the infinite to be the non-dual, then there must also be a finite in order to negate it and to get to the infinite, the non-finite. So the finite is also part of the infinite, a necessary part, in order to be the negated part of the infinite.
Yes, yes.
Hmm? So we don't accept the oneness without difference, first of all. And in that sense, the true infinite has to be considered both. And in something like that, you can find as one part of the true infinite explained in Hegel. One part of it, not the whole. Because we still have to come to the being for self of the infinite, that is the true infinite in Hegel's philosophy. And that being for self is the subjective nature of the true infinite, which is the personality, the subjectivity, the absolute as subject. But of course, that's only one step also.
It is also conforming the finite and infinite simultaneous existence in organic whole.
Yes, it's also found.
Because there. The whole has its own identity, and also the individual has its identity within the whole also.
Uh-huh. That they are connected. Yes, that's connected to that.
Yes. But actually, this Mayavad, you know, simply tries to, you know, eliminate this, you know, finiteness, the finite identity.
So we have to see unity and difference. That's one part. And then above that, the organic or subjectivity. All right. Very good. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very merciful today.
But connection getting disconnected. Our Deepak Prabhu is here, Maharaj, and he is very intelligent also.
Okay. I have to be very intelligent to understand these things, Deepak. What's that?
Maharaj, can you hear me?
Slightly. Go ahead. Talk. Try talk.
It's very nice to hear your teaching. You know, it's great.
Very good. I'm happy if you can get something from that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes. By the mercy of Guru.
Dandavat Maharaj.
Dandavat Maharaj.
माधव पुरी महाराज की जय
भक्ति विनोद ठाकुर की जय